Sairam, and a warm good morning from Prashanthi Nilayam on this beautiful Thursday. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and this is Radio Sai Answering Booth, a show where I invite questions from you listeners and answer them based on Swami's message. To look for answers in Swami's message, we must first believe that the answers to our problems are to be found there. And to have that belief, we must have the faith in Swami's divinity, or at least the faith that Swami's wisdom is supreme. The reason we listen to the experiences of others, stories from devotees and miraculous occurrences in their lives and such, is to convince and reiterate to the mind that here is the divine creator. Having established that, the mind must be trained to first look for instructions on how to lead life, for solutions to problems in the message of Swami. And then the mind must be encouraged to follow it. Knowing Swami and accepting Him as divine, as even as a guru, would be incomplete if we leave behind Swami in our puja room or Sai centers and continue to live our lives not allowing Swami to percolate into our everyday lives and decisions, isn't it? Swami would say devotees feel that to follow Swami's message, they should have grace, almost suggesting that even their inability to follow Swami is actually Swami's mistake. But in reality, Swami's heart is like butter. For it to melt, there first needs to be warmth. And that warmth comes from the devotee's sincere effort. Once there is that sincere effort or sadhana, God's grace will begin to flow, to inspire further, energize, strengthen and protect. Let us begin today's show by offering our humble pranams to Swami as always, and by reminding ourselves that the first step has to be ours and ours alone. Alright then, let's head to the show. On this week's show too, I have one question, and in the later part of the program, I will read out one classic story from Swami's biography, Satyam Shivam Sundaram. The question is going to be the main course of the meal. That story is sure to be the dessert. But both have to wait till I serve you the appetizer. Yes, dear listeners, it's the quote for this week. And it's going to be the words of one of the most inspirational personalities of the 20th century, and that is Martin Luther King Jr. I quote, "The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy." End of quote. This quote was certainly made to raise the social conscience of people at that time, but is so true as much in our individual journey too. What defines us is the way we behave, react, respond, decide and choose when we are under pressure. And for that, we need to do two things. Firstly, act and think in the right way when there is no crisis. If in normal circumstances we cannot be ideal, there is no way we will rise to the occasion under crisis, isn't it? The preparation for an exam we write in tension is done in leisure. We build a roof for the rainy season when it's still sunny. An athlete trains alone before he competes under pressure from competitors. But the real worth of all these efforts are tested during the testing times. And that is why the second thing we have to do is be ever welcoming and prepared for trials and tribulations. I'm not wishing or hoping that any of you have more troubles, but just saying that. So whether in crisis or not, let us build a strong character. Let us try our best to follow Swami's words. And more than anything else, please Swami. So before we head to the question, let me read the quote from Martin Luther King Jr. one more time. I quote, "The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy." The question for this week is from Brother Krishnamohan from Chennai, so we'll head to that. It's a short question, so I will be reading it out myself, and this is his question. "I am a loner. Though I like solitude, I love to be in friendship or in a relationship. However, I have not been very successful. Your advice, please." So that's the question from Brother Krishnamohan from Chennai. Thank you for asking me that question. I'm not sure if I can help you find friendship or relationship, and I'm hoping that that's not what you really meant. But the question you ask is very important in one sense, because it is centered around an important spiritual concept, and that is the difference between loneliness and solitude. We all know that spirituality is an individual journey. So doesn't that mean that when we want to become spiritual, we should seek more solitude? But then, why do we feel lonely instead of spiritual when we are alone at times? Why do we seek friendship? Why do we seek to be in the company of others or to be in a relationship, even though we wish to lead a spiritual life? One of the first statements in anthropology that we learn even when we were in school is, man is a social animal, right? Which means humans are meant to live together as a society. We are created in such a way. So it is quite natural that we want to live together and seek company. And there is an interesting scientific study I came across which explains why and when do we tend to seek company of others. Of course, this is just a hint of the biological process, and I'm sure as more research happens in the field of neurology, we can understand more about the human being. It is said that, according to the study, that when we are worried, scared, in danger, or in stress, the brain starts secreting some enzymes which prepare our body to either fight back or run away. There is more blood flow to the limbs, other essential functions of the body are slowed down, and so on. These are processes which happen when we are under stress. But the problem with us is we tend to remain in stress for long periods because of tension and worries. So the brain has devised a way of dealing with this. It secretes another enzyme called oxytocin, right? And among its other functions, this hormone is believed to relax the muscles of the heart and prevent heart diseases that are caused due to prolonged stress. Simply put, this enzyme, oxytocin, tries to reduce the ill effects that stress can cause in our body. Okay, so what? That's what you'd be wondering. The interesting thing is, this enzyme, oxytocin, also makes us seek the warmth of company. It also creates in us a longing to be with others. So when we are in a trouble, when we are in pain or depression, we are naturally driven to seek company. Can I say biologically driven? Not only that, this enzyme is also secreted when we receive care from others. When someone gives us a warm hug or comforts us and so on, that's why it has an epithet, the cuddle hormone. It is secreted when we bond socially. So when in trouble, we seek company and love, and when we receive love, we are relieved to a great extent from the ill effects of stress. Well, this is something that I heard from a TED talk by a scientist, but it does make a lot of sense, right? So I'm guessing that it must be quite precise. But even otherwise, it's an experience that we all have had, isn't it? When we are in pain or worried, when we share it with someone, we feel light. Or say when something pleasant happens, we are eager to share it with others. And when we share it with them, we seem to feel more happy. So there definitely must be some scientific reason for that. But as I had said in an earlier episode, when an individual gets married or takes up responsibilities that are not confined only to oneself, automatically the focus shifts from the self. And the moment we are able to take our focus from ourselves and our pain, the suffering will reduce. So first reason why we seek relationships is, when we are very sad or very happy, we tend to crave for company of others. The corollary of that is, till we attain a state of equanimity, we certainly need social bonding. And all of us are swayed by the ups and downs in life. So all of us look for friendships and relationships. Well, that's one point. There is one other time when we generally want to share our thoughts. That is, when we are in a dilemma. We have multiple voices speaking in our head, or we have multiple options before us, and we want to know what is the best thing to do. This is a completely different topic, and I think I've spoken a little about it, about how the voice of conscience always gives the right direction, but other reasoning in the mind starts giving multiple options. The more we start following the conscience, the more clearer it gets, till a point when only the voice of the conscience is heard. But when we are still in the state when there are multiple voices, we turn to others to help us decide, right? And whose advice we seek and whose advice we eventually follow becomes very, very important. Now think for yourself. Sometimes we will not have the guts to follow our conscience. Then we will turn to a friend who will probably reflect our mind and the confusions in our mind. He or she will say, yes, yes, this is what you should do. What is the point in being ideal? Do what will benefit you. So though you know it is not right, you take a wrong advice, pacify yourself saying, see, even my friends are suggesting the same, and you carry on, right? But what does Swami say? Swami says, seek good company. And good company will give good advice, which will reflect not your mind, but the voice of your conscience. So say you have a straightforward friend, a very good friend. You decide to do something wrong against your conscience. Then you go tell him, and that friend tells you, no, no, you should not do that. That is wrong. So though you did not have the courage to follow your conscience, when you get good advice like this, you feel a little encouraged to follow it, right? The point I'm trying to make is, when in a confusion or dilemma, we wish to share a dilemma with others, and whom we share depends on whether we are turning to good or bad company. So as long as I have dilemma in my head, I will seek the company of others. And when I listen to the advice I get from good company and follow it, I'm actually following the voice of my conscience. And as I said before, the more I follow the voice of the conscience, the more clearer it gets. The more clearer and louder the conscience becomes, I will have lesser dilemmas and I will seek company of others much lesser. And isn't this what Adi Shankara said in his Bhaja Govindam? And Swami would also quote this, right? Satsangatve nissangatvam. Satsanga or good company will lead to nissanga or solitude, or more precisely, a state where we don't crave for company. Now I'll come to a different point altogether. There's a saying that goes that man does not live by bread alone. Though the context in which it appears in the Bible is quite different, it is also quoted to say that for living, we need more than just the basic necessities of food and clothing, right? For the topic we are discussing today, I would like to speak about two such essentials that we need apart from food and clothing to live a human life. We need love and respect. We need to be respected and we need to be loved. But actually speaking, what we need is self-respect and self-love. More than self-love, which sounds a bit narcissistic, it is more of self-acceptance. When we say there are people who love us, our parents love us, in one sense, it means we are accepted as we are. And it is not tolerance, it is an active acceptance of who you are and that your presence matters to them. This is an important point and we'll come to that a bit later. But right now, what I'm saying is, all that we actually need is self-respect and self-love. But what we do is, we attach self-respect to the respect others give us and our self-love or acceptance to how much others love us. And when we have self-respect and self-love, we will effortlessly respect and love all others. In this process of self-love and respect increasing, leading to we being able to love and respect all, is one of the processes that is happening as we progress spiritually. When we eventually are convinced, I am not the body, I am essentially divine, we will need no other reason for self-respect and self-love. But till that point, we feel if others respect us, we are worthy. If others love us, then this life is worth living. And this is not wrong really, but it is something we have to slowly drop, this act of seeking reinforcement from outside. When we love and respect ourselves based on others' opinion, our love and respect for others also will depend on how society looks at them, right? So do you see how there is a connection between our ability to have perfect unconditional self-respect is proportional to we being able to respect all? how when we have perfect unconditional self-love, it will also lead us to love all. But right now, all of us don't have perfect self-love and respect. That is the reality, and till we get there, we need others around to respect and love us. And that is one more reason why we seek company. I mentioned that when people love us, in one sense, it means our existence matters to them. This is another very important point, as I said. To lead a life of fulfillment, we must have this feeling that our existence matters to more people than just ourselves. A lot of youngsters these days think that they can live for themselves, pleasing themselves, doing whatever they want to do and so on. Yes, to an extent, to a certain point, you can lead a happy life this way. But after some time, life will start feeling empty and hollow, because we need this feeling that my existence matters to others and my life serves more people than just me. That's why when people take the extreme step of suicide, the prominent thoughts in them will be either my living and dying does not matter to anyone, or the feeling that I'm not able to do much for my loved ones, so this life is useless. And the latter is the case when in the case of poverty-driven suicides, right? But of course, such suicides are a result of inner weakness and lack of self-confidence coupled with the feeling that my life is not worthy. So it's definitely wrong. But that's a different theme altogether. The limited point here is, we all need this feeling that my life has some meaning, and that its meaning is larger than just for selfish purposes. And this is very, very natural. Why? Well, the ancient sages and thinkers contemplated on this point as to what is the purpose of this human body and human life for ages and ages, and finally came up with this one statement. Paropakarartham idam shariram. The purpose of this human body is to be useful to others and not just for ourselves. Para upakaram, useful to others. So fulfillment can be found only when this human life is lived with a larger purpose than just our own joys and comforts. And we all have body consciousness. We believe that I am the body. So furthermore, reason why we must find ways of making our life useful to others. Okay, coming back to the point of respect and love. So we have established that we need love and respect. And these are also like air and water. We don't need all the air and water in the world to survive, isn't it? We need only an optimum quantity for our existence. Similarly, we don't need millions of people to love and respect us. Even a small number of people to whom we matter is good enough. So within this world, we build a small world where our existence has importance. Otherwise, we are like one in a billion. This feeling will hit when you're probably flying in an aircraft, when suddenly it occurs to you how insignificant you are. Swami would also say this, in this massive universe, Earth is after all one planet. On this massive Earth, India is just one country, and in India, Andhra Pradesh is one of the many states, and the district of Anantapur is a pinprick on the map of India. And in this tiny dot, this district is even smaller is Puttaparthi, and in the thousands who live here in Puttaparthi, you are just one individual. Swami would say this in his discourses. When we think this way, we feel so very insignificant, don't we? Then where will our existence matter, and why should anyone respect us unless we are some, say, world famous person? Even if you are a famous person, you're bound to feel hollow with this same feeling at some point. So within this massive world, we seek to create a small world for ourselves, with family, friends, colleagues, relatives, where we can find that love and respect which is so essential for living. So when we seek to forge friendships and have relationships, we are basically looking for those who will love and respect us, so that we can love and respect ourselves. Okay, there are two more issues here, which we will have to deal with when we're speaking about relationships and spirituality in specific. One of it is attachment. When does a relationship become an attachment? As I explained till now, the idea of seeking love from outside is to eventually not need that love, or in other words, we should not need that reinforcement from outside. Attachment happens when I completely depend on one person or a few people for my happiness. So how do we avoid that? One, be conscious of this process that we are not meant to depend completely on things outside. Second, remember that each of those people who come into contact with us have their own personal journeys to make, and your importance to them and their importance to you is only very limited. And as we discussed earlier, the more we move closer to our inner self, nissangatvam will automatically be possible. But putting it differently, we will start feeling complete as we are without the need for company. It is not that we will run away from any company or socializing, but we will not be desperate for company. So we will be in a state where if there is company, we will enjoy. If there is no company, still we will enjoy. So say I have a friend, if he or she is with me, I am happy. In the absence of that person, still I feel complete and I enjoy my solitude. And the moment I release the other person like this, it is love without attachment. Satsangatve nissangatvam, nissangatve nirmohatvam. This solitude or nissangatvam will lead to nirmohatvam or detachment. Well, I said there are two more issues. One is attachment. What is the other one? Now, if in a relationship I feel I am no more receiving love and respect, does that mean I look for some other relationship where I can find love and respect? Say you are married and after some time you feel the initial love and respect that was there is not there anymore. It may or may not be so, but say you feel that way. Then going by what I've been saying, you should look for another partner, right? Well, that's what most people do these days, and sadly our novels, movies and popular media also portrays that as the right thing to do. When there is no love and respect in a relationship, move on. That is why you have to keep two points in mind. One, what is the purpose of a relationship? As I've been explaining so far, the whole idea is to make this self-respect and self-love independent of what others think of us. But if we keep replacing the persons in our life to constantly get love and respect the way we want or perceive it, we will never progress from that state, isn't it? Let's say there is a baby. After a few months, the mother wants to train the baby to walk. So she will forcefully leave the child down, hold the child's hand and say, walk. But if the child says, this mother is no more carrying me, let me look for another mother who will keep carrying me, will the child ever learn to walk? What the child doesn't realize is, when the mother carried the child, it was love. When the mother holds the child's hand and forces the child to walk, it is love. And when the child walks independently and the mother is just watching and enjoying, that too is love. Similarly, in our life, Swami sends people to us who all are actually dispensing Swami's love to us, say through the form of our parents, friends, spouse, children and so on. But it is all the time Swami's love. Only the containers are different. And the whole idea is to feel respected and loved independent of all these external inputs. This will never happen if we keep changing our relationships, and that is one reason why committing to a relationship becomes very, very important. Let me come to the last point, and another reason why this idea of constantly switching relationships in search of love and respect is not purposeful. I wonder how many of you must be feeling that all this while I was predominantly speaking only about receiving love and respect. So in a relationship, are we only supposed to receive and not give? Any relationship is not perfect if we are not able to give and receive. In fact, love is all about giving. As Swami's famous quote goes, love is giving and forgiving, right? And as I said in the very beginning, one of the signs that we are developing self-love and self-respect is we will be able to love and respect all around. These two are completely interrelated. When we say love all, what we actually mean is loving all immaterial of who or what they are, isn't it? respecting all irrespective of who or what they are. So the whole idea is we should be able to love and respect not because of the external nature, but the inner reality, which is divine. If I love someone, I will love that person no matter what dress that person wears. Tomorrow, if that person has fallen in a slush and comes to me all dirty, I will not love that person less, isn't it? If that person is dressed in a manner which is not to my taste, I may not like the person's looks or appearances, but I will still love that person. Similarly, in this process of both loving ourselves and loving others, the purpose is to see God in ourselves and in others. And we are trying to reach a state where we can say, Swami, I love you. I love you no matter which form you come to me in. I will love you in that form of Sai Baba. I will love you when you come to me dressed as my neighbor or my wife or my husband or my children. So once again, when the idea is to be able to love a person unconditionally, wouldn't it be counterproductive to keep changing people we are in relationship with in the pretext that we don't like their behavior or we feel they have changed or the way we look at them has changed and so on? When love is giving, the way forward is to be able to give unconditionally. So just as we are trying to make our self-love and self-respect independent of outside forces, we must also try to make our ability to love and respect others independent of people's external appearances, achievements and nature. A very good opportunity is available to achieve this through relationships. When it comes to relationships like parents and siblings, most of us accept them. But when it comes to choosing a life partner, it comes down to commitment. So commit yourself to a person. If you are of a marriageable age, look for a person who loves and respects you and commit in the form of marriage. That's what Swami would say. And then you set off this process of satsangatve nissangatvam, nissangatve nirmohatvam, nirmohatve nischala tattvam, where nischala means steadiness, where your nature of being loving will not change with the nature of the person before you. You will become more and more established in these qualities of love and respect. And finally, nischala tattve, jivan mukti. This steadiness will lead to liberation. Alright then, let me try to summarize what I've said so far. When spirituality is an individual journey, why do we need company in relationships? We are created in such a way that when in pain or when in ecstasy, we have an urge to share that moment with others. So those of us who otherwise enjoy solitude also will feel lonely at such moments, especially when we are low. So the more equanimous we become, the more we will begin to enjoy solitude. Since none of us are really completely beyond that duality of joy and sorrow, we all have a need for relationships. And it is, in a sense, nature's way of ensuring we live as a society and help each other. The other time when we seek company is when we are in a dilemma or confusion. What we must do is seek good company when in dilemma. The advice we receive may be tough to follow, but if we seek good company, the more we will be pushed to follow the voice of the conscience. And when we follow our conscience more and more, the confusions and dilemmas will reduce, and this craving for company will also reduce with that. Then I spoke about two important factors in any relationship, especially when we seek a life partner or spouse. We seek respect and love. The reason we seek these two is so that we can have self-respect and self-love. So we use the respect and love that we get from outside as a temporary support. Just like how when we build the ceiling of the house, we use props made of bamboo poles. Eventually, they have to be removed. We cannot live in a house where the poles are still there propping up the ceiling, right? So we are not meant to get attached to people. All through this journey in a relationship, keep this in mind. And also, it does not mean that once you are detached, you have to move away from that relationship. For you can still play the role of a prop for the other person, right? That's why, as a practical suggestion in any relationship, ask yourself what you can give instead of wondering what use is this relationship to me, be it friendship, marriage, or even your profession. When we wish to take the to the spiritual path especially, this is a very important step. We must seek to be contributors. We should seek to add value to others rather than seeing what benefit will I get from others. When this attitude comes, automatically there will be commitment to relationships. When there is commitment, you will not keep changing relationships in search of love and respect. Rather, you will get an opportunity to perfect your ability to love and respect and make it unconditional. That's the state when our nature to love all, including ourselves, becomes independent and unwavering. That, I feel, is the state of Nischala Tattvam, a prerequisite for Jivan Mukti or liberation. So look for a good partner who can love and respect you. Commit to that person, mentally be prepared to overcome differences that arise. Love and respect that person through all these differences. Remember that however closely related you are two individuals with individual journeys. And that will help you in not getting too attached. Try as much as possible to be the giver in any relationship. That way, as you love and respect yourself unconditionally, you will also learn to love and respect others unconditionally. Well, that's been a pretty long answer for a very short question, so I better stop here. Brother Krishnamohan, if you need any clarifications in what I've said so far, you can always write to me to my personal mail ID. To the next part of the program where I promise to read for you a classic story from Satyam Shivam Sundaram. Well, most of you must have heard it or read it too, but I wish to read it again for your listening pleasure. So these are stories that were meant to be immortal and read over and over again. In one of the discourses, Swami makes a very, very profound statement. He says, just as you bathe yourself with water to keep the body clean, the mind has to be bathed with the truth. And just as bath is an act we repeat multiple times to remain clean, the mind too has to be repeatedly bathed by the truth to ensure it remains pure. And in that sense, these stories heard any number of times will cleanse our mind. So here it is, the stories from Satyam Shivam Sundaram, Volume 1, Chapter 8. And the chapter's name is Cape to Killarnmark. The 9th All India Divine Life Convention, held at Venkatagiri in 1957, was a landmark in the campaign of Bhagwan, who presided over the deliberations and sounded the clarion call of spiritual regeneration. Swami Sachidananda, the organizing secretary of the branches of Divine Life Society, later confessed that when the news that Baba was to preside reached him at Thiruvannamalai, he was taken aback. For on inquiry there, he had been told that Baba was versed only in magic and he was a poor speaker at best. I soon discovered that my informant was profoundly ignorant, said Swami Sachidananda later. On the opening day of the convention, the town was filled to overflowing with delegates, visitors and devotees, including a large number of renunciates from faraway Rishikesh and places such as Rajahmundry, Kalahasti and Madras. A gorgeous flower-bedecked palanquin was placed at the main gate of Venkatagiri Palace for Baba to proceed into the theatre where the inaugural session was to be held. When he came out and saw the symbol of pomp, Baba most politely refused the honour in spite of the entreaties of the Raja, because he said, there are so many monks here that I would like to walk with them. Eventually, when Baba returned to Puttaparthi, he was joined by Swami Sadananda and Swami Sachidananda. They were both eager to spend more time in the divine presence. One evening, Baba took Swami Sadananda with a party to a natural spring in the hills behind the Nilayam. Sitting beside the spring, Baba spoke of the existence of Chaitanya, super consciousness in man, beast, vegetable and stone. Swami Sadananda quoted passages from the Upanishads to show that the same ideas were to be found in India's ancient texts. Suddenly Baba assumed an authoritative tone and declared, "You call them ancient? I know them all. I am beyond space and time." When Baba left after a few days for a short stay in Kodaikanal Hills, Swami Sadananda and Swami Sachidananda also joined the party. The 6 weeks on the hills provided a great number of opportunities to the ascetics to receive the Lord's grace in ample measure. They were able to catch a glimpse of Baba's unique divinity. Swami Sachidananda spoke about this at a meeting at Puttaparthi at the inauguration of the Meditation Grove on the 29th of June 1957. He said that whatever others may take Baba to be, he was convinced from personal experience that he was super consciousness itself, omniscient, the motivation of beings, the inner resident of all beings. He then described how he became convinced. He was in Baba's room one afternoon. Baba was reclining on his bed. Suddenly, he stood up and shouted in Telugu, "Don't shoot," and fell upon the bed in what is called a trance, but is best described as going on a transcorporeal journey. His body became stiff and remained in that condition for about an hour. When he returned to his physical frame, he looked at those around him and requested a telegram be sent immediately to an address at Bhopal. He dictated the message and the address. It stated, "Don't worry, the revolver is with me, Baba." Swami Sachidananda expressed a doubt whether the postal authorities would accept the message for transmission, for it spoke of a revolver, which comes under the Arms Act. Others agreed with him, and there was a discussion, pro and con. Baba wanted the telegram to be sent quickly, and alternative words to bypass the rules were discussed. Sachidananda suggested the word instrument for revolver, and Baba agreed that it would convey the meaning intended so far as the recipient was concerned. The wire went quickly to its destination, 1,000 miles away. Everyone was anxious to know what the nature of the averted tragedy was. Baba, however, put aside all attempts to draw the information from him. On the fourth day, a letter arrived, revealing that Baba had saved an individual in distress. The writer of the letter had served in the Second World War and was high in government service. He was very much upset by the administrative arrangements following the reorganization of states, for persons far junior in service were promoted over him. He had no one nearby to assuage or comfort him or even to listen to his tales of woe. His wife was at her parents' village. Distracted by the unlucky turn in his career, he decided to end his humiliation by means of the revolver. There was one handy. He tried one shot just to see whether his hand would be steady for the fatal second. But before he could shoot again, Baba had shouted, "Don't shoot!" There was a loud bang on the door. Baba had come, but not as Baba, but as an old college mate, accompanied by his wife and a porter with a trunk and a carry-all, to make the scene authentic in every detail. The officer ran into the bedroom, placed the revolver under the bed, threw a sheet over it, hurried back into the front hall and opened the door. There were three forms of Baba ready to play their parts. The college chum was very boisterous and demonstrative. Baba had become, by instantaneous materialization, a friend who had just the qualities that would remove melancholy and could give the officer the tonic that would cure him of despair. He responded to the treatment and became normal very soon. He even smiled and laughed at the jokes of his old friend, and as the conversation proceeded, his thoughts of suicide melted away. The lady also joined in the talk, but when they discovered that the mistress of the house was away, The visitor put an air of profound disappointment and said that he would prefer to stay with another friend. In spite of the appeals of the person whom he had saved, the friend departed 45 minutes later after he had materialized with the lady, the porter, the trunk and the carry-all, thus drawing curtains on a superb dramatic performance. After seeing them off, the officer hurried to the bedroom. He was perplexed to find the revolver was not there or anywhere in the house. Who could have removed it? He had gone to Puttaparthi once with his wife, who was an ardent devotee. Could it be Baba? Ah, it must be him. He locked his house and ran in haste to the address to which the college chum said he would be going. His doubt was confirmed. There was no one there. The three visitors had melted into thin air, with the trunk and the carry-all. On returning home, he was reflecting on the stunning events that had happened that day, when all of a sudden he was startled by another knock on the door. It was a telegraph messenger, with the wire from Kodaikanal. "Don't worry, the instrument is with me, Baba." Swami Sachidananda said that this incident is much stranger than the Parakaya Pravesham extolled in the Puranic texts of ancient India, which is the entering into the body of some person. But this was the creation at the very moment of the willing of three bodies and making them act their roles. The impersonation of existing individuals, correct to the minutest detail in voice and inflection, gait and gesture, idiom and idiosyncrasy, and the recitation of incidents and anecdotes relating to past decades when they were both students at the same college. "This," said Swami Sachidananda, is possible only for an incarnation of the Lord." What a beautiful incident that is, dear listeners. Swami saved a devotee in Bhopal. Through that inspired devotion in Swami Sachidananda sitting next to him in Kodaikanal, later the Swamiji, Swami Sachidananda and Swami Sadananda were so impressed by what they had experienced during their stay with Swami that they wrote to Swami Shivananda of Rishikesh and their fellow disciples, describing the grandeur of Swami, and eventually many became devotees to Swami, and also resulted in Swami's trip to Shivananda Ashram in Rishikesh. And imagine 60 years later, I am sitting here in Parthi and reading it out to you, and you are listening from different parts of the globe and being touched and moved with devotion. Sai Bhagavatam is immortal. For eons to come, people will read, reread and relate these stories and will be led to godly lives. Sai Anant, Sai Katha Anant. But as I said in the very beginning, these stories and experiences are not like a movie we watch in a cinema hall. We cry, we laugh and enjoy, and then get on with our work lives. Each of these stories must eventually lead us to take Swami and his words seriously, more seriously than the words of our peers, so-called experts, and our own reasoning minds. The prayer to Swami that he leads each one of us to that ultimate consummation. I bring this episode to a close. So dear listeners, if you have a question, you know where to put it to. You have to drop it at the Radio Sai answering booth, and you can do that by writing to me, and my mail ID is prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. That's my personal mail ID, so the mails that you send there will be read only by me. So just in case, if you want to be anonymous, you don't want your name to be mentioned when I take up your question, you can let me know. We'll arrange that. With much love, I offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet. I thank all of you for joining me. I thank Brother Krishnamohan for sending me that question. I'll meet you again next week at 11 a.m. on the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. You have another set of programs lined up for you. What's following is the Ashtotram program hosted by Brother Raghu. Happy listening. I'll meet you all next week.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Satsanga se, Nisanga tvam, Nisanga se, Nirmohatvam.
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna.